It's Happy Day.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, you get a chance to test yourself against Lucky Strike's quartet of quizzery and frippery. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues in its regular groove, completely carefree and unrehearsed. And tonight, our carefree board consists of the eminent sports and nature maestro, John Kieran, the New York Post conning tower man, the lyrical Franklin P. Adams, the quintuple fret composer, Oscar Levant, and as our guest of honor, an American whom we are glad to salute, Lieutenant Commander Gene Tunney, U.S. Navy. Remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, gentlemen, suppose we start this evening with a question coming from Stanley Woodward of this city. How are these feminine names associated with sports? None of them is Jean, Mr. Tunney. This is not a setup. The first is Mary Ann. How is that associated with sports? Mary Ann. Mr. Tunney.
Frank Moran's right-hand blow, Mary Ann Blow.
That's right. Why was it called that?
Well, he took the name. There was a fighter from Australia 40 or 50 years ago called Australian Billy Murphy, who was the first man to coin that term of Mary Ann for a right-hand wallop. And Frank Moran took it from that old-timer.
He could be a sports expert, Mr. Kieran, couldn't he?
He is.
If the occasion demands.
And argue with him.
Now, the next feminine name is Daisy. Daisy, how is that associated with sports in any way? Mr. Tunney again had his hand up.
Well, when a blow is landed, it's a daisy, a good clean blow on a fellow's chin. They call that, that was a daisy.
I suppose that would be true, but I think there's a closer association, not necessarily with boxing, by the way.
No. Baseball.
Mr.
Wasn't there a man named Daisy Hooper? What makes me say that?
I don't know. Well, I decided the things coming to your head. Mr. Kieran, did you have an idea?
Why Daisy
Hooper? Well, the term is used generally in sports, but it's used in baseball.
Yes, as Mr. Tunney said, it's, I suppose any good hit or blow is a daisy. Wasn't it applied to Dazzy Vance's breakaway pitch, Mr. Kern?
No.
Mr.
Kern?
No.
Well, it may have been, but it's quite specious.
Really? You mean I have to cross this off my card?
No, no, Mr. Woodward's on the Tribune. You better let him get away with anything he wants.
Well, apparently, according to Mr. Woodward, Daisy was Dazzy Vance's breakaway pitch. He called it Daisy, and when he was in the South, they called it Dazzy, sort of slurred over the...
I was going to say it's a bad pronunciation, or one of it is. I always call it Dazzy.
There it is. Well, that's how he got to be known as Dazzy. Oh, I think if Mr. Woodward is correct, you gentlemen are wrong.
That's right.
How about, which is what I call quick thinking, how about Calamity Jane? How does that apply in sports? Mr. Kieran.
Calamity Jane, I believe, was the name of the putter with which Bobby Jones achieved a good deal of fame on the links.
Yes, that's exactly right. Apparently he won his Big Four golf championships with it. But that gives us 2 out of 3 and sends us on to the next question, which comes from Mr. Wilcox.
A good joke on Woodward.
Well, here's a... this boy is from my own little bailiwick. Mr. Wilcox Gibbs of New York and of the New Yorker sends the following question in. Get 3 out of 4, if you can, on this one. In what weight class was the fighter in each of these stories? Now, the first story is Bernard Shaw's novel, Cashel Byron's Profession. What weight?
Heavyweight.
A heavyweight?
Yes.
Don't think so. Can you prove it, Mr.
Yes,
Tunney?
The story is about a young Englishman who went to Australia and had taken boxing in England as a gentleman, sportsman, and then got on his uppers and went to sweeping out of gymnasium.
Yeah. You've got everything right.
That's why he's a heavyweight.
He was a heavyweight. But he won the heavyweight championship of Australia and then was to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world.
And was he actually a heavyweight? Did he have enough poundage on him to be a heavyweight, or did he fight out of his class?
Well, he could have fought out of his class. I don't remember his exact poundage, but he did fight for the championship of the world.
I have a quote here from Mr. Shaw. I have never been beaten, says Cashel Byron in Mr. Shaw's novel. I have never been beaten, although I am only a middleweight. I have stood up with the best 14 stone men in the States or in England. Now, it's possible that as a middleweight, he stood up against a heavyweight.
That was a great saying of Bob Fitzsimmons. He was supposed to have said, the first thing he was supposed to have said after he defeated Jim Cobden for the heavyweight championship, and I'm only a bleeding middleweight.
Well, you've outpointed me, Mr. Tunney. Okay. Now, how about the weight class of Golden Boy? Golden Boy, Mr. Levant.
Lightweight.
Lightweight, yes.
Joe Bonaparte.
Good enough. So 133 pounds. Golden Boy is a play, Mr. Levant.
Clifford Odets.
Clifford Odets. And the weight of the character in Hemingway's story, 50 grand.
Wellerweight.
Wellerweight is right. I remember that.
Well, I remember the story.
Very good. Remember the exact poundage?
Hemingway made only one mistake, and a technical mistake in that story. See, a technical mistake in that story. See, a technical mistake in that story.
Be careful, he's pretty good himself at the time.
He is pretty good, but he had the fighter, the challenger, going in to have his dinner on his way to the fight club. That is not done.
That's wrong. And the weight of the character in Hemingway's story was 143 pounds. Well,
he took the story from Mickey Walker and Jack Britton.
Oh, he didn't make it?
Oh, no. He fictionized that.
That's so.
Novelized that fight.
I never knew that. Now, how about Kid Galahad? What weight class? And Mr. Levant?
He was a heavyweight.
He was a heavyweight. What?
Wayne Morris played him, and he's quite fat.
Well, we prefer to say, let's use a better word.
Heavy.
Like that. Heavy, yes.
Heavy
solid.
Going.
Solid is the word. Heavyweight in the movie Kid Galahad. That gives him three out of four.
By Frank Wallace.
I didn't know that.
Frank Wallace.
Good enough. How about this one from Joan Smith of New York City? This is a news event question. What news event of this week do the following bring to mind? Get three out of four if you can. Throne regained after 5 years and 3 days.
Haile
Selassie, yes, has regained the Ethiopian throne. Salary changed from $50,000 per year to $21 a month. Mr. Curran.
Give that to Oscar.
Gee, you're generous.
Well, it might be too prophetic, but I'll take it. It's Mr. Greenberg. Henry Greenberg.
Yes.
Hank Greenberg. Greenberg.
Clear. We've got three Greenbergs now.
And today's paper's in $55,000.
Oh, he's been raised since he got in the Army. He was inducted into the Army this week. Three lack confidence. What news event does that call to mind? Three lack confidence. Mr. Adams. So far,
Nye,
so good.
Senator Nye?
No. No. Even that only makes one.
If he isn't one of them, I give up.
He isn't one of them. Three lack confidence. If I put it another way, I'm sure you're getting
it. Board on information.
I beg pardon?
He isn't board on information.
No, I think you're doing very well. If I say 447 have confidence, would that make it easier?
Yes.
For Mr. Tunney.
Yes. The Congress, on their vote on
you're quick and wrong, Mr. Tunney, this time. Mr. Curran.
The British House of Parliament.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yes, House of Commons. He gave a vote of confidence to Mr. Churchill. Well, that's one wrong. We have to get the next one right. Prime Minister arrives in the United States. What news event, Mr. Levant?
Is that Prime Minister Menzies?
Yes. Yes.
Of what? Australia.
Of Australia. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Tunney and Mr. Levant. Now, how about this one from Otto E. Schmidt of Amelia, Ohio? Again, get two out of three. This is a Shakespeare question. According to Shakespeare, what is woman's name? What is woman's name? Mr. Kieran.
Frailty.
Frailty. Can you give us a line or so?
Frailty, thy name is woman.
Good, good. That's right.
From Hamlet.
That's from Hamlet. Thank you.
By any other name arose.
mixing your plays. According to Shakespeare, what is not as deep as a well? What is not as deep as a well? Mr. Kieran again.
Well, that was a wound that was received by Mercutio, I believe.
That's
not
perfect.
As deep as a well, nor as wide as a church door, but twill serve.
Twill serve.
That's right. Thank you. That was nice of you coming on the end there that way, Mr. Adams. I like that. According to Shakespeare, what is named the jewel of their souls? What is named the jewel of their souls? That's a hard one.
The immediate jewel.
The immediate jewel, yes. But what is it, Mr. Adams?
Mr. Kidd.
Isn't that honor?
Well, it's something like it. It's something like
dishonor?
It. No.
True.
No. It's something very much like honor. Good name. Good name. Good name in man and woman, dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls. What's it from, Mr. Kieran? Remember?
Not Othello.
Othello is exactly right, yes. Othello is exactly right. Good for you. That gives us three quarters out of
three. That's the thing that was not filched.
That is the thing that was not filched, yes. And it goes on, who steals my purse steals trash. How about this from Hawley Mason of San Jacinto, California? Under the Marquess of Queensberry rules, you say Marquess, Mr. Tunney, not Marquis, don't you?
Marquess.
Marquess, yes. Under the Marquess of Queensberry rules, say Queensberry, don't you?
Queensberry.
Under the Marquess of Queensberry rules...
Marquis is somebody's husband.
Everybody's husband. Under the Marquess of Queensberry rules, it's going to be a good question if I can ever get to it. What United States heavyweight champion won and lost his championship outside of the United States, and where? Both won and lost it outside, and where? Well, we have several hands. Mr. Kieran.
Jack Johnson won it from Tommy Burns in Sydney, Australia, and lost it to
Jess Willard.
Jess Willard in Havana, Cuba.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran. Thank you very much.
Exactly. In the 19th round.
Oh, did you know all this, Mr.
I'm wrong. 26th round.
Oscar, you want to be careful with Mr. Tunney.
He won it in the 14th. I'm going to be up in the 26th.
If I'm going to be frightened of him, I may as well talk about it.
Now, what heavyweight champion won his title in the longest bout and lost it in the shortest? Won it in the longest and lost it in the shortest.
Is that one of those 72-round fights?
No, this is under Marquess of Queensberry rule. This is not another fighting bare hand. Mr. Tunney.
No, Jim Corbett. Jim Corbett, no, he didn't lose it in the shortest. He won it in 27 rounds.
Now, this is a man who did both. Won it in the longest and lost it in the shortest. Mr. Adams.
John L. Sullivan.
You just picked that up out of a hat.
Picked it up. I've heard of very few of these gentlemen.
Oh, I know. I know.
But, Mr. Kieran?
Jess Willard.
Yes, Jess Willard.
I was going to say that.
I know you were, Mr. Levan. Why didn't I ask you?
Because you don't like me. The whole country knows it.
I love you. I'll write you a letter. Funny, I've never liked a man as much as I do Mr. Levant, except a half hour every week. Jess Willard is exactly right, as my dear friend Mr. Levant and Mr. Kieran say. Beat Johnson in 26 rounds in Havana and lost to Dempsey in Toledo in 1919 when he failed to come out for the fourth round. That's right. Now, what heavyweight champion won and lost the championship in less than 12 months? I think there are two answers here. My dear friend, Mr. Levant.
Why don't you call him Mr. Tunney, who can kill me? It's either Max Baer or Carnera.
It's both. Mm-hmm. Well, you're wonderful this evening, Mr. Levant. I've never seen you sparkle.
Well, that wasn't the golden age of boxing, and that was when I was around.
That's quite correct. Carnera or Baer would be the answer to that question. This one from Gertrude C. Baker of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And by the way, I'd like to stump some of you gentlemen, if it were at all possible. This one asks you the following. Who in literature asked for music in this way? Now, in the first case, the character said, no accounting for tastes. Sing her turtle soup, will you, old fellow? Who said it? Mr. Kieran.
That's Alice in Wonderland.
It is.
I've forgotten the... that's where that song of the evening, Turtle Soup, comes in.
That's
beautiful
right.
Soup.
That's
soup
right.
Of the evening.
That's right.
Well, the walrus and the carpenter.
Mr. Adams, you're shaking your head.
This isn't a walrus and the carpenter.
No. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Adams.
Such dainties would not stoop.
Although you've got everything but the character. The character is the...
The mock turtle.
No, the mock turtle is the one to whom the query is addressed. The statement is addressed.
Oh, and the griffin.
Attaboy, Mr. Kieran. The griffin, yes. The griffin says that to the mock turtle. That's 100%. Now, how about this one? If music be the food of love, play on. Everybody got that one? Who says that? Mr. Kieran?
The Duke. in Twelfth Night.
Yes, the Duke in Twelfth Night. Duke, first what's his name?
He's the Duke.
Yes, but he had a name, too.
Duke Ellington.
No. Duke Orsino. Duke Orsino in Twelfth Night. Here's another. Ed, play Alice that Beethoven thing you wrote. Listen now. Mr. Levant.
That's, I think, from You Can't Take It With You.
It's exactly right, yes. Essie says that, and You Can't Take It With You. And that gives us 3 out of 3, and so far we don't seem to have lost a solitary thing. Lucky Strike has saved all sorts of sets of encyclopedia and a great deal of money so far. Now Mr. Cross gives us his own special sidelight on the Times.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, I've noticed that most of us are smoking more these days, more than we used to. That's why it means so much to choose a cigarette that's really mild, with the natural mildness of finer, lighter tobaccos. Now, of course, this kind of tobacco costs more, but at market after market, the American Tobacco Company pays higher prices to get it. Let me give you a concrete example. At tobacco auctions in Carthage, Tennessee last season, American paid 23% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 23% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. And smokers, so it goes at market after market. We pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated why Lucky's are in tune with the times?
I believe you have, Mr. Cross. And it took you exactly 57 seconds. Now we'll start the second half of the program with this question coming from Nathan Siegel of this city. And get all on this. I think it's very easy. What English word was derived from each of these famous characters in history or literature? Now, the first character is an English queen. What English word do we derive from a famous English queen? Mr. Levant.
No, Miss, mine's done good.
Are you sure of that? Mr. Tenney?
Elizabethan.
Yes, Elizabethan would be a very good one. There's still another.
I was going to say best, but with a prefix to it, I better not.
No? All right. Another one?
The definite article.
What one?
And.
Oh, goodness gracious, Mr. Ellis.
I have the indefinite article. How about the Victorian character?
Victorian, yes. Victorian or Elizabethan. Yes, either of those would do. What word is derived from the name of a Greek strongman? Mr. Levant.
I was thinking of Herculean.
You're right. I think it's pronounced Herculean, my dear Oscar. what word is derived from a 19th century Irish estate agent? An English Mr. Kieran.
Boycott.
Boycott. Mr. Tunney, you were going to say that. I saw a boycott in your eye. Boy in one eye and cot in the other. Who was Mr. Boycott, Mr. Kieran?
He was the manager of an absentee landlord's estate in Ireland, and the people treated him in the way that we now call boycotting.
That's the whole story. What English word is derived from an Italian political writer? An Italian political writer. Mr. Kieran.
Machiavelli.
Machiavelli, yes. What does it mean?
Well, he wrote a book called The Prince, I believe, in which he laid down certain political principles for the guidance of the state.
Yes.
And it was a rather, it had the...
He
kind
was,
of taste that we now call Machiavelli.
Yes, he was Hitler's political godfather.
Very good, Mr. Tunney. That's
with
true.
Fadiman Cunning. In
Machiavelli means that we think of it as being very devilish or cunning ever since Machiavelli wrote his book. Machiavelli's first name, by the way, Mr. Kieran, was what?
Mackie.
No. It was...
Machiavelli.
No! Think not. I think Niccolo, and some people think that Old Nick, another word for the devil, comes from his first name, but I don't think that's true. Now, there's a piece of useless information, Mr. Kieran. Mrs. Peter C. Bertie of Tulsa, Oklahoma, sends this one in. This is a musical question, gentlemen. You're going to hear a series of notes which represent the tuning of familiar string instruments, 3 of them. And for the sake of uniformity, they're all played in the same register. Identify the instrument which is tuned according to each series of notes. Is that perfectly unclear to everybody?
Everything but the same register, but it's all right.
All right. Are you ready to start, gentlemen? Okay, here we go. Mr. Levant.
Go ahead, John.
Violin.
Violin's right. Mr. Adams, what was that using?
Violin.
Violin. Well, there's no question about it. It's violin. And now the second series. Mr. Levant had his hand up at once. How about it, Mr. Adams?
Don't know that one. I can't play that one.
Mr. Levant.
That's the viola.
The viola is right. And now the third and last. Mr. Tunney.
Bass violin.
Double bass, yes.
I bet he can't tell the notes. That's very hard. I bet he can't.
Can you, Mr. Tunney?
No.
No.
Well, of course not. Can you, Mr. Levant?
I think I'll make a mistake.
Well, yeah. Roger, dear.
Well, you let yourself in for it.
Well, I'm a little taken aback by all this affection, which at the end will kill me.
So you can tell it to me.
Well, it's E. The low note is E. Then a fourth higher is A. Fourth higher is D. And a fourth higher is G. It's tuned in fourth.
Sounds all right.
That's right. Didn't think you knew it.
No, I didn't. How about this one, gentlemen? So far, we don't seem to have any stumps. Worries me. I think we'll get 3 out of 3 on this. From James Halloran of Camden, New Jersey, we get this question. There's another Shakespeare question. Who is the Shakespearean character whose first words in the play are the following? So foul and fair a day I have not seen. Mr. Tunney.
This is Macbeth.
It is. Be quiet. Don't say a word more, Mr. Tunney. Macbeth is right. Macbeth is exactly right. Those are his first words. A little more than kin and less than kind. Those first words, Mr. Kieran.
Those are the first words?
Yes, first words uttered by this character. What's the character?
Well,
who's
that's
the character?
That's in Hamlet.
Yes, who says them?
Well, Hamlet says
right,
them.
Right, that's perfectly all
right.
Hamlet is right. What country, friends, is this? Who says those words?
Richard II, I think.
I beg pardon?
Richard II?
No, sorry. Mr. Kieran?
He must have been a snob, whoever said it.
What country, friends, is this? How about a guess, Mr. Kieran? You're generally very good at this.
Country
from? Well, we only have 33 or 4 more plays to guess from. It's from The Twelfth Night. And Viola says, oh, what country, friends, is this? She lands on the shores of, is it Illyria?
Illyria.
That gives us only 2 out of 3, sending $25 to Mr. Halloran, plus a copy of The Britannic. How about this one? You get 3 out of 4 on this. It comes from Mr. M. Shear of Brooklyn. It's been suggested that the United States, in cooperation with Great Britain, should occupy for defense the following places. Now, who owns each place at the present time? The first is Greenland. Mr. Tunney.
Denmark.
Who owns the Azores Islands?
Portugal.
Mr. Tunney and Mr. Levant, what were you going to say?
Why say anything? Go ahead.
I don't know. Portugal is right. Mm-hmm. Who owns the Canary Islands? The Canary Islands? Hands, please. Canary Islands?
Isn't that a little Portugal, too?
I'm not saying a word, Mr. Levant. Mr. Tunney, was that your hand up?
No.
Just your eyebrow you raised then. Portugal's wrong. Mr. Kieran?
I'd take a chance on Spain.
You'd be right, but I wish you'd come in first. Spain is right. Who owns Dakar? Mr. Kieran?
French.
Yes, the present Vichy government. That gives us 3 out of 4. And how about this one from John Cushman Fister of this city? Name 4 women of fact or fiction who are associated in people's minds with needlework, or sewing, or weaving, Mr.
The Fates.
The Fates. Did they weave?
Spun.
Yes, one of them did, I think. You remember her name?
Hecate.
No, you're in the wrong department.
Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos.
Yes, Clotho is the one who spun the thread of life. And the other two that Mr. Kieran named did something else with the thread, cut it off, and measured it. How about it, Mr. Levant?
In a ballet by Salvatore Dali's dance to Venusberg music, there's a little midget whose sex I never found out. He crochets.
Yes, that's right.
Wagner.
I'll never forget it.
I said he, which I don't know.
I don't know. It. Call it in.
Yeah.
Mr. Tunney?
And there was the woman who knitted during the guillotining and...
Madame Defarge.
Madame Defarge, as Mr. Kieran reminds us, from The Tale of Two Cities. Mr. Adams?
And there was the tailor in Robin Hood.
That's right. There was a tailor in Robin. What was his name?
Robert Taylor.
Taylor who sat on old Kerwood End.
No. Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant.
In Beautiful People, there's a lady in the first act with the boy who writes the one-word novels, and she's knitting, and he says, what is that? She says, that's knitting, and he says, is that good? So that must be a scene about knitting.
Gee, I wish you'd diagram that sentence for me.
I'm reacting to Sir Royce.
I never saw it, but it sounds perfectly reasonable. Mr. Kieran?
Why, a famous one was the wife of Ulysses, who wove a lot of stuff at night and unraveled it, wove it in the daytime and unraveled it at night.
Yes, her name, Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's what has me guessing at the moment.
Mr. Adams?
How about Penelope? Gentleman in the Midsummer Night's Dream, Bottom the Weaver.
Yes, Bottom the Weaver. Must have...
Must
have woe. Sure.
I know one more.
Yes, Mr.
Somerset
Levant?
Mom in the letter. The woman who murders in the first scene. She subsequently does some very fancy knitting. I don't remember what...
I don't remember that either.
It's called fancy knitting.
You remember the most abstruse things,
well,
Mr.
Well, I consider
Levant.
Needles an enemy.
Well, any one of those would do. Betsy Ross, of course, who is supposed to have made the first American flag, is famous for her needlework. Now, how about this one? So this is an opera question from Moses L. Lorenz of Brooklyn again. Get 2 out of 3. In these famous operatic encounters, who was declared winner and new champion, in Mr. Tunney's phrase? Lohengrin versus Telramund. Who won? Mr. Levant.
Lohengrin won, and in a return bout, beat him again.
Good enough. He killed Telramund, yes. What was that fight about?
Well, it's complicated because it's about Elsa's brother, who was a swan.
What?
Well, it was a swan for 2 acts.
Oh, a swan, yes. Anyway. I thought you said something else.
And they suspected Telramund. I can't say that fellow's
Telramund, name. Telramund. Break it up into 3 parts. Telramund.
He can just play stuff he can't pronounce.
Telramund suspected Elsa. He foisted the suspicion on her, and she challenged him with some... challenge of poetry, and some knight came to defend her, and they fought.
There you are, sure.
They fought twice.
What could be clearer? Now, Siegmund versus Hunding. Siegmund versus Hunding. Mr. Tunney?
That's a Wagnerian...
Die Walküre.
Walküre.
Now, who wins?
Hunding.
Hunding, yes. He runs his sword right straight through
Siegmund. It was a fixed fight, though.
It was a fixed fight. Right. Wotan.
Wotan put the screws in, and it was very easy for him to win.
Not the screws. He shattered his sword.
Yeah.
Now, in the fight between Melot versus Tristan, who won? Mr. Levant?
Melot.
Yes. Now, Mr. Cross tells us how he was questioned by a member of the audience after our last Information Please broadcast.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman. A gentleman asked me, how can the makers of Lucky's pay so much above the average market price for tobacco and still stay in business? Well, the answer to that was easy, because the facts are that it's the best way not only to stay in business, but to build more and more business. Here's how it works. We pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Lucky's. That makes Lucky's a finer, milder cigarette. And the result is that more and more people want to smoke Lucky's. So you see, it's really the very best of business practices for the American Tobacco Company to pay, for example, 18% more than the market average at Warrenton, North Carolina last season, 27% more at Bowling Green, Kentucky, 34% more at Brookneal, Virginia. Yes, that's good business for us because it's good smoking for you.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $25 and 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Cunny, for helping out the party this evening. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will perform as usual. And as our guests, we will have Mr. Frank Sullivan, humorist, and Mr. Dick Maney, press agent, who are more familiarly known at present as the feuding backer and publicist for the Broadway hit Arsenic and Old Lace. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with your questions, and don't forget to send the correct answers, too, to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.